This is Self Starter. Welcome back to the Self Starter Podcast. This is a podcast that highlights small business owners, the self-employed and freelancers who have taken the plunge to create their own desirable lifestyle. My name is Andy Dowling. I'm also the host of the Andy Social Podcast. I play bass in the Australian metal band Lord, and I'm also a dispute resolution specialist of all things. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook by searching at Andy Dowling, or you can go over to selfstarter.com.au where you can learn more about yours truly and anything and everything to do with the self-employment world. This episode is with Trevor Williams, who is a personal trainer and owner of Estrogym, which is a gym located in Broken Hill, New South Wales. Now, if you've never heard of Broken Hill, get onto Google Maps and type in Broken Hill just so you can visualize where this town is located in Australia. Because, well, I'll give you a bit of an idea. It's about 13 hours drive west of Sydney and probably about 6.5 to 7 hours drive north of Adelaide. So it's really in the middle of nowhere. It's a cool little country town. I've been there a few times over the years and I'm really stoked to have my first ever self-starter guest from Broken Hill, and hopefully not my last. So folks, if you're listening and you know somebody, hit me up, let me know. But I had a lot of fun talking to Trevor about his own journey, his personal branding around coaching and personal training, and also how he built this gym from the ground up. The gym's gone through a number of different phases and steps of evolution over the years, and like all businesses, some growing pains. And one of the coolest things that I liked from this chat was that the gym concept was a dream that he's had since he was about 16 years old. He was sketching out what he wanted his gym to be when he was older. And it's just so cool to see somebody fulfill a dream that he had from an early age. And there's a lot of inspiring moments in this chat. And, you know, there was a lot of twists and turns, ups and downs, all those cliches. It wasn't an easy road for Trevor, but he has this fantastic gym in Broken Hill of all places. So there's a lot of key takeaways to get from this chat. And you guys know me. As always, in true self-starter fashion, I'll have my key takeaways at the end of this episode. But I really, really encourage you guys to enjoy this. I understand that many of you may not be interested in going to the gym, and I certainly struggle with the concept at times. But nonetheless, there's a lot of interesting stuff that you can get out of this episode. So enough of me. Please enjoy this really great chat with Trevor Williams of Estrogym.
My name's Trevor Williams. I live in a small country town called Broken Hill. It's in New South Wales, but it's about half an hour away from the South Australian border, 6 hours away from Adelaide. So it's a little bit of a hike away from everywhere. So it's sort of right smack bang in the middle of Australia. I currently own a gym. It's called Esther Personal Training Studios, or Eat, Sleep, Train, Repeat Personal Training Studios. I've owned that for the last four and a half years. And I'm also a personal trainer as well.
So taking a step back, did the PT stuff come in first, and was that something that you'd always been doing for a long period of time, and then eventually that sort of evolved into you taking that step to owning your own gym?
Yeah, so personal training definitely comes first. So where it all started, actually, it started like about 15 or 16 years ago when I was about 16 years old. I was heavily into sport. So by that time, I'd been playing soccer for about 10 years. I'd been playing footy for about 4 years, AFL for about 4 years. But I kept getting injured every single season. But I just loved sports, so I was always into sports. And then one of my teachers took me to her gym, and I started working out there and loved it. And then about 4 years later, I started working at the local YMCA, and I become a qualified personal trainer there. So I've been a personal trainer now for just over 10 years, like just over 10 years. So I've always loved it. Like, it's just always been my passion, like fitness and health and helping people. So after that, I sort of I did some work on some mines, because we've got a really big mining background here as well. It's like where BHP and Rio Tinto actually originally started. Mm. So, yeah, so originally, like, I was working on the mines as well. And then about 4.5 years ago, I was working on a mine, but it was outside of Dubbo. So a little gold mine called Tomingley. I was working on that as a shop fire, so blowing stuff up. It was really cool. but each panel, so I'd work 8 days on, 6 days off. And each panel, I'd drive back to Broken Hill for 6 days. Because my partner at the time was here. So I'd drive back to see her. And on those 6 days, I'd be doing personal training out at the park. So that's where it all started. So I was personal training out of the park. And I noticed every single time it rained, I'd lose clients and I'd lose money and they weren't able to have workouts. It's like, I have to work something out here. So I was personal training just by myself, not out of a big gym, just literally in a park. The park was called Sturt Park. And I got a little studio. It was about 90 square meters big. And I started personal training just out of that. So Esther Personal Training Studios. I was born from personal training.
So, I mean, there's heaps of things here. This is great. So when going back to you being sort of 15, 16 and being heavily into sports and then being introduced to a local gym through a teacher and then finding this passion for just fitness and well-being, and even sort of going off on this parallel path or this other path of you getting into the mines and having opportunity there, did you always sort of think that personal training would be something that you would eventually go into some sort of full-time job for yourself? Or did you always, up until sort of more recently, that you always thought it would be that thing that you would always do with your spare time and that was something on the side of whatever your main source of income was going to be?
You're probably going to laugh here. So like looking back to when I was 15, 16, like there were the various reasons why I really got into sport and fitness in the gym. But I remember when I was that age, I'd like be drawing plans of what I was going to do when I grew up, right? Yeah. When I got older. And so I remember drawing gym plans, right? Like plans of like just a gym, right? So I draw a gym and I'd like this piece of equipment will be here, this piece of equipment will be there, and this is what we're going to do. And so I wasn't so much thinking about being a personal trainer or anything like that, but I was sort of planning on building my own gym and opening my own gym. And I had other goals, like I always wanted a six pack. so that one come true. And I wanted to, another goal was to earn $1 million. Another goal was to own the gym. Another goal was, this, you're going to laugh at this one again, was to do some stripping.
Good on you.
Where does that even come from at 16 years old? But so most of these are sort of accomplished. But yeah, it wasn't personal training as such, but I love the industry. And it wasn't as a hobby because whatever I set my mind to, I know that I'm going to give it 100% and achieve it. So, but it was, I was drawing gyms in school in my textbooks at the age of 16.
That's so cool because, I mean, a lot of people have these sort of pie in the sky visions or goals of where they'd like to go. But then when you get into the, I guess, you know, quote unquote, real world and you get out there into the workforce, that you quickly become jaded and hit with a dose of reality. And a lot of people just sort of go off on another path to I guess, mediocrity. And for you, I mean, years and years later, just doing a whole range of different things and taking different steps, you've got to a point where you're able to own your own gym, which is fantastic, especially going back and thinking about where you were when you were about 16 years old drawing up these plans. So it's really, really cool. But I guess the question along the way is that although you had this vision and you're sort of working towards it, the things such as working in the mines and doing these things along the way, was it sort of always in the back of your mind that these things were going to fuel and fund the bigger dream, and so you're always going to eventually end up there?
That's a little bit of a yes and no. So I was really lost when I was younger. I was really lost. Like, I knew that there was these things that I wanted to do, but I had no idea how to get there. Like, there was no reverse engineering or anything like that. Like, I had no idea how I wanted to get to this gym or how I wanted to get this six pack. But it was always in the back of my head, and because it was my passion, these things kind of fell into place, and I worked towards it, if you know what I mean, not knowing how to do it. And 17 years ago, there was no real internet back then. Like, it was just starting to come to fruition, you know what I mean? Like, we still had the old dial-up.
Yep.
So, like, everything I learnt was from a book. The mines are really big in Broken Hill. It's kind of something that everyone's just done. Everyone really moves in that direction here. But from really early on, I knew if I didn't like something, I just didn't stick to it. Like, I'd get rid of it. So within the last, probably before I started this business, I didn't have a job for very long, even though they were really good jobs. It wasn't my passion. It wasn't what I enjoyed. So I didn't stick to them for a really long time.
A bit of trial and error along the way, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of trial and error along the way. But I knew I wanted to own a business, and whatever job I did have, I actually excelled in it. So become managers and usually moved up the chain pretty quickly, because I like the leadership side of things and teaching people and coaching people. Yeah.
And I guess, obviously those qualities come into play when you're self-employed, because, you know, and especially in the line of work that you're doing, you've got to try and inspire and motivate and sell a concept which involves, for a lot of people up front, a lot of discomfort and facing fears and a lot of mindset things. So having a bit of leadership background, or just even having a tendency to gravitate towards having an interest in those qualities, certainly gives you a lot of strength, to excuse the pun, in what you do.
Yeah. It's definitely helped along the way. Yeah.
Yeah. And going back to, I guess, you know, doing the PT stuff in the park, identifying that, you know, you're losing a lot of clients whenever it rains. And I mean, I can't imagine it would rain a lot out in Broken Hill, but but I'm sure when it does happen, you certainly feel it. That moment where you sort of thought, well, I need to move up. Were there any challenges that you had, or something, or a little sort of internalized fears that you had to sort of face to sort of take those next steps?
Yeah. So it's just funny. Like, first up, like, being in Broken Hill, it doesn't rain often, but it felt like whenever it was on my 6 days off from the mines and I come back to Broken Hill, it rained all the time. It's just funny how that works. Hey, so I'm like, what's going on? Something's against me here. But no, I there was definitely a lot of challenges, but there weren't any fears. Mm. So I like maths as well, right? So I quickly matched it. I worked out the viability, what I needed to earn to start my business and just to make a comfortable living, right? And I think I worked it out to be about 17 PTs per week. So if I could secure 17 PTs per week at this cost, I'd be set. I'd be pretty sweet. It boomed from there. Not going to lie, it absolutely went crazy. But so I mathed it first. I was like, all right, so this is all I need to do to get to where I need to be. I basically made the decision. I hated traveling. So I'd work 8 12-hour shifts on this mine. And then on my last shift, I'd drive another 8 hours straight after that, straight back to Broken Hill, to be back in Broken Hill, ready to go. And then it'd be the same going back to Dubbo to work on the mine. So I was like, look, I'm really over this. I'd been doing it for about 9 months. Mm. I was really over it. It was starting to get to me, and it wasn't the future that I would, like, if I continued to do it, it wasn't the future that I wanted to have.
Yeah.
So I basically made a decision. I did some maths. Now, also, I wasn't that good at saving money, and I wasn't that good with money. Like, even though I was working on a mine in a pretty good position, a lot of the money that I was putting in was going back to so much travel each week. So I wasn't actually saving much money, and housing was quite expensive, and just bought all this furniture. So I wasn't actually saving any money doing this, right? So I was only just scraping by working on the mines plus doing the PTs. So I didn't actually have any capital before I started got my very first, I guess you could say, business, place to lease, place to rent. So how I funded it. So I saved my first $10,000 by creating a boot camp. And every single cent of that money that I created, it was all paid up front for the next 8 to 12 weeks. Every single cent funded my very first studio. And that's how I sort of took a step back. Yeah.
I've heard of a few people doing this where it's, you know, you're, especially if you're providing a service rather than a product, but I mean, it could even work for a product as well. If you're able to get somebody into some form of a subscription, for a lack of a better word, where people are committing to a return, repeat visit along the way, but you're getting that upfront payment. I mean, that's a great way to fund something, or to get something up and running by getting that money up front. It's sort of like, you know, the old pre-orders, pre-order a product and then you get the money, then you can go and print or produce the product after the fact. But yeah, it's a very smart way of doing it, where a lot of people would just probably be in the reverse, just gradually sort of, you know, scraping little bits and pieces of money together. So yeah, props to you to think that way.
Cheers, thanks. Yeah, to tell you the truth, like, it was one of the biggest realizations that I sort of had with business, because yeah, that again, that's kind of like your reverse engineering, like you're getting paid up front for it, and then you can go get your prints, or you can go and do whatever and then send it out. Because technically you haven't lost a cent, you know what I mean? You haven't invested a cent, and you've got this upfront capital that you can invest into the business.
it's yeah, now the cogs are turning. I'm thinking of a whole range of different things that, I mean, there's so many possibilities there, and it doesn't matter what you do or the type of business that you run or you want to run. There's a lot of creative ways to find money from almost nowhere to begin with. And especially because you've been doing a number of sort of PT sessions with people, you know, in that park, I guess you already had some branding in that local area to begin with anyway. So that sort of helped you a little bit to get those upfront, you know, commitments from people.
Yeah, it definitely did. That's where we're really lucky. Actually, I shouldn't say it's lucky. Like, being in a smaller town, everyone does know everyone. But also, I had 10 years of doing PTs before this, building up a reputation and a certain standard, which really helped with me running my very first boot camp and getting numbers up to be able to generate this money to put back into the business. You go.
No, go. I've held on to something, but I'll come back to that.
Cool. So just quickly as well, like you said, you can get really creative with ways to do this. Like, you can do it with products as well. So throughout the last 4.5 years that I've been running this business, I've used different methods and different strategies to get upfront payments to pay for things. And it's becoming a lot easier with things like, is it Kickstarter?
Yes.
Things like that, where you can sort of get an upfront payment to, like, crowdfunding. It's crowdfunding. Yeah,
I mean, I'm mainly associated with crowdfunding with a lot of, I guess, you know, the creative arts, music, but also, I guess, some of the flavor of the month tech startups and whatnot. But it could really be used for anything, especially if you can create a model around it where people are getting rewarded for certain things, for their contributions, or I guess really for some people, it's a compelling story where people get a bit of an emotional spark and want to be a part of something and contribute to something bigger.
Yeah, definitely.
You mentioned earlier about doing the math and sort of working out, you know, how many sessions you needed per week to get it up and running and sort of survive to begin with. And then you said it really quickly and it moved on, but you said it pretty much just exploded. It exceeded your expectations to begin with. And what you also said was, you know, the years of you doing the personal training and building up a reputation in the local area. But I guess probably just to jump into that a little bit, certain things over the years and even sort of leading up to that launch had you done that gave you that reputation in the local community? So, you know, what sort of branding had you done, marketing, or even just, you know, your own qualities that gave confidence in other people in the area?
So like within the area, so I started, I guess I played sport since I was about 5 or 6, like soccer and footy AFL. And then at about 16 is when I really started hitting the gym. So I was working out from about the age of 16 to 21, constantly, like every single day. Like, I had these goals. I wanted to be a bodybuilder. I wanted to get a six pack, and I had these goals. It wasn't quite working for me at that age, just going to put it out there, but like, I had these goals and I was dedicated and I was working out every day. There were various different reasons why I was working out and why I actually loved it. I'm actually starting to work out now. So people would see me in the gym every single day around every single gym in Broken Hill, to tell you the truth, for about 6 years. So I'd worked out in every single gym. I'd been there consistently 6 to 7 days a week for that period. I actually moved away to uni to study human movement and teaching for 3 years. Didn't quite finish that. Then I moved back to Broken Hill to work at the YMCA. Because I had that history already. I already had that history. So I worked back at the YMCA, which is where I become qualified. So that was about 20. I was about 21 when I did that. And still, from that day up until now, I'd pretty much worked out every single day consistently in the gym. So I worked out at the YMCA. I become qualified as a personal trainer. I was also their programs coordinator. So I did like some classes similar to like your Les Mills, like your spin classes and that. So I was running them consistently. I think I was there for 2 or 3 years at the YMCA. Doing that before I moved to Adelaide, and I got a role predominantly in sales, but it was a company called GoFit selling treadmills and cross trainers and that sort of stuff. So it was still within the industry, but it was with sales. So I was living in Adelaide for a couple of years, still within the industry. I met some really good people in Adelaide, which own gyms, which have also gone on to own more gyms now. So there was a lot of networking back then. that I didn't even realize was happening. I did a couple of bodybuilding competitions back then as well. So, and this is about when the time that Facebook started coming up as well. So, like, some things were going up on Facebook. So I was always just doing it, you know.
A lot of visibility, really.
A lot of visibility, yeah. Yep. It's crazy to think the amount of visibility that there is now compared to, say, 10 years ago, because it's just boomed as well. So I was living in Adelaide, did a couple of bodybuilding contests. Then I moved back to Broken Hill and I worked in a health food shop before taking on Anytime Fitness. So the first Anytime Fitness that moved to Broken Hill, I was their original manager. So I took on that place. So I was managing it and doing personal training. So again, there was a lot of speaking to people, a lot of rapport was built there. That place boomed. I think we got it to 600 or 700 members within the first 6 to 9 months. And then about that time, the end of that 9 months, 10 months is when I left to work on the mines again.
I mean, that's incredible. Just a quick comment, because you mentioned it before, like making that step to, you know, owning your own gym. And I asked about fears and you said, well, it wasn't really fears, more so challenges. And just hearing that, I mean, I can understand why you didn't have, you know, fears, so to speak, because you've been so immersed in this world where you're behind the scenes and you're talking to people in the industry, you're managing other gyms as well, so you can see the mechanics of how it all works. And also, you know, going back to you as a teenager having this vision and drawing out the plans of a gym, it all sort of just builds up to this moment where you're more or less mentally ready. You've got all the framework in mind. It's just a case of executing it when it was time to make that step.
Yeah, it's really funny that you say that. Like it was just a matter of time, like waiting until I was mentally ready for it, because I swear if I had have tried this 10 years ago or 8 years ago, it just would not have happened. Mm. I just wasn't ready mentally for it.
So 4.5 years ago, you took over.
Yeah.
You know, you've launched a gym. You've got your own gym. What's it look like now? Like what's, you know, I guess being in a regional town and there's probably a few gyms in the area, then a lot of them that you've built relationships with being a client or being a part of them. How does that work in a regional area? And have you had any challenges, I guess, doing your PT stuff, but also, you know, running a gym and being in an area where, I guess, I don't know, stereotypically from the outside looking in, there could be a lot of challenges with being sort of in a relatively remote area.
Yeah, that's actually a big one. So this is gonna be a big answer. I think there's like a lot of different answers with this. Mm. I think there's gonna be challenges with like whatever business you have. There's always gonna be challenges that pop up. I think from the start, there were a lot of challenges with this business. So, firstly, I wasn't even living in Broken Hill. I was doing 8 and 6, and I didn't have any capital behind me either. So basically, I had nothing saved. Every single cent that I got from that boot camp went into decking out the first studio. And if you can imagine this, right, the first studio was 90 square meters. So, it was literally 10 meters long. Like that was the length of the building, by about 7 meters wide. And there was like a back little kitchen toilet area, which wasn't even in use. So it was less than 90 square meters. Mm. So every cent that I got went into decking that place out and actually buying equipment. So I bought, I think, 6 barbells, 3 squat racks, a rower, just like little things like that, $10,000 worth of stuff. So I moved in there and then I did my maths. So I was like, all right, 17 PTs, I'll be sweet. Must have been a month later, I was sitting on like 40 to 50 PTs. I'm like, oh, okay, this has escalated really quickly. I wasn't ready for that. So I actually, in this 90 square meter studio, cut a long story short, I hired, I think there was 5 PTs working in there, or 4 PTs and an admin working in this 90 square meter area. And each PT would have 5 to 6 clients. So we filled it. we filled this area. We ended up having to move from that place, not only because we filled it, but there were other reasons as well. So we ended up having to leave that area at really, really, really short notice, like within a week.
Wow.
Yeah. So we basically got the boot. We had to leave that area, which was a challenge in itself, but that was sweet because we didn't have much equipment and we were ready to move anyway. So we found this place and we moved into a place that was about 350 square meters. Mm.
A bit of an upgrade.
Bit of an upgrade,
Yeah.
and I was lucky because at this point I'd saved money.
Yeah.
So I invested about $25,000 into the next place, with a 3-year plan. So my plan was to be in this place for 3 years, then look for another expansion and hopefully buy my own building. So we're in this next building that was about 350 square meters. It was rocking. I spent 25 grand decking it out. So all the money that I had saved decking it out, there were still things that I needed to do. So I was literally, again, at that point, working paycheck to paycheck, making sure that everyone was getting paid. After that, we were there for literally exactly 1 year, like exactly 1 year. So I spent probably the first 4 months paycheck to paycheck, buying new equipment, putting turf in the place, just making sure that like the little things were done, the electronics were right, the computer system was right, having a desk, because this is stuff that we didn't have in the old place. So each pay went for that for about the first 4 months. And then at about the 4 month mark, I was like, something isn't quite right here. Something's not quite adding up with the people that I was renting the building from. I'm like, something's not quite working out here. Like, I don't know what it is. So I stopped spending money on the business. I'm like, I feel like I should start saving. So I started saving again. And another long story short, at about June, we were told we had to move. And at this point, we had a big gym. Like we'd actually got a big gym with a lot of equipment. We had probably thousands of kilos worth of weights. It really sucks moving gym equipment, I
I
just
can
got to
only
tell you.
imagine. I was just gonna say, like, I
Oh.
hate moving house or just moving like a room full of stuff somewhere else, but a gym sounds like a nightmare.
It's absolutely crazy. We get like hundreds of thousands worth of tons of just equipment has to be moved, right? Like
Wow.
tons and tons of this stuff. So about the 6 month mark, things weren't quite adding up. Within that, to June to December, we were basically told that we had to move again. So at this point, I was like, oh no, I don't have enough money saved. We've now got a big gym. It's hard to find buildings in Broken Hill, if you know what I mean. Like, because it's not a great big place, buildings in Broken Hill that are going to be right for a gym. I was lucky enough because I was training a real estate agent at the time. So he was like, hey, this has just come on the market. Come check it out. So I went and checked it out. And this building was for sale, but I didn't have enough money to get it. So this is probably September, a little bit, yeah, probably September of not last year, the year before. And I checked out this building, and basically we had to move. I negotiated, and we had to move out of the building that I was in by the end of December, like Christmas. Had to be out of there. So didn't have enough money to purchase this building, plus the upgrades, because I'd lost my 25 grand that I spent on that building. Like it was just gone. Couldn't get that back. Didn't have enough money to get more equipment for the next one, so I sort of had to think outside the box. So I ran another couple of boot camps and 12-week challenges, all up front as well. So that generated a lot of upfront cash. So we got a lot of people for this boot camp, and we got a lot of people for this 12-week challenge, but I still didn't have enough money to put a deposit down for this next building, this commercial building. So I did some crowdfunding, which is where the crowdfunding thing come into it. And we generated just enough to get a deposit to buy this building, the building that we're in now. So it was like there was a lot of hard work. That was a massive challenge. It was taxing. Actually, at that point, my partner, she fell pregnant as well, and we had a baby at this exact period as well. So I had to move the gym, had like a newborn, had no cash, had to find cash. It all just hit at once.
It's always the case. Everything happens at the one time.
When it rains, it pours. Yeah.
Just
Especially in Broken Hill.
absolutely. Just touching on the crowdfunding stuff, because we've touched on it a couple of times. Just to go into the specifics of that a little bit more, what sort of things, or how did that crowdfunding campaign work, or what did it look like? Was it a case that people were just donating from a feel-good perspective, or was there certain rewards and platforms and things that people could redeem their contribution for?
Yeah, so I feel very funny about people donating. It's just we like I don't feel like I needed a donation. Like yeah, I'm just very, very funny about that. So as a part of it, we were doing upfront gym memberships, so you could get a year gym membership at a discounted price.
Great.
Being a service-based industry, we also did personal training, so you get 10, 20, 30 personal training sessions at a discounted price as well, and it was all paid for upfront. So I just use crowdfunding as a platform to do that and to share it.
So really, I mean, it was a pre-order platform, really, just to get people in, get some great upfront deals for people to get in early, sort of like the early bird offers. And that's obviously served an additional purpose for you, because that money's funded that next phase in your business. So it's like e-commerce, really, but just using a unique platform that people are excited about.
Yeah, that's it. And I don't think many people in Broken Hill had even heard of crowdfunding. Like, there might have been one or two other, because you can see what areas it's from on the platform that I used. And I think there was like one or two other campaigns that had ever been done.
Wow. Do you think that helped you at the time? Because, like, from a novelty point of view, that people liked something new and fresh and it was exciting?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
That's cool. I like that. So where you're at now, and maybe we've skipped a couple of steps, but you know, you got the deposit to upgrade, and you know, and that was with the assistance of crowdfunding. Has that moved into the place that you're in now?
Yeah. So the place that we're in now, I own the building, which is fantastic. So we're not leaving anytime soon.
Perfect.
It's about 800 square meters, so it's a pretty huge building as well. That basically funded us getting the building. It was enough for the deposit. Downside of that was I needed to redeck out the entire building, so I didn't have enough money for, let's say, the rubber mats on the ground. I didn't have enough money for the turf. I didn't have enough money for extra equipment, for renovations. I just didn't have that money. And I wasn't able to get a loan big enough to be able to get everything done that I needed to get done. So the downside to that was each pay from there on in, for it's probably up until around about now, actually has gone literally back into reinvesting into the business each and every pay. So kind of living paycheck to paycheck, I guess you could say.
So I guess moving into one of the next questions I had was, I guess, where you are now and, you know, what the next few months or the next few years are. And I mean, has those plans that you drew when you were 16 come to fruition now? And does it look like the way that you envisioned it, or are you sort of still, you know, some certain things that you still got to tick off the list as far as, you know, those goals that you planned for so long?
Yeah, it's business is awesome. Like, I actually really, really love the challenge of business. So before this, I was really heavily into lifting weights and bodybuilding and powerlifting and that, because it really challenged me. It kept me stimulated. Mm. I find business very similar to that. So basically the effort and energy that you put into it is what you get out of it. And I love that. So it keeps me really stimulated. But it's definitely not what I expected as well. To say that there have been like some hard times is an understatement, and I'm sure so many people with businesses understand this as well, especially starting up. Like, there have been so many challenges, but the things that you learn from it and the type of person that it creates for me has been amazing, and I've loved it. I've loved the process. In terms of where we're going to take the business next, so I definitely do have some really big plans. I find it hard to just really maintain anything in my life, like even with my body. I find it really hard just to maintain and take it easy. So, like, I do have some bigger plans. Like, I'd like to keep growing the business. I do have a side business called Prep School. So that's my online coaching platform. So I'm looking at taking that outside of Broken Hill now.
That's okay. We'll dig into that a little bit really quickly, because you know, a lot of big things that we see, and for me talking to a lot of different business owners that are, you know, ranging from a whole range of different industries, is the jump into the digital world. And, you know, a business that may have been around for a long time, or stereotypically or traditionally, doesn't need to be online. A lot of people are finding opportunities by creating online platforms and finding that, you know, their customers don't have to just be the ones that are walking past the front of their shop or their building in that particular town or suburb. It can be pretty much anywhere. There's no limitations anymore. So, I mean, for you, I guess that's, you sort of touched on that, is now you can look outside of Broken Hill and see where there's more opportunities. So do you want to just talk a little bit about that and sort of what you found in, I guess, these early stages? Is it's only been something recent that you've just started to do?
Yeah, it is. It's very recent that I've started to do this. Probably, I think I'm about 4 months in with this. And it's right now, it's a very big trial and error for me, seeing what works and what doesn't work. I've had to learn really, really quickly with this as well, with the things that are working and the things that aren't working. For an example, so I try to expand one of my 12-week challenges into Mildura, except I basically went into Mildura with no one knowing who I was and just did a lot of promotional content rather than content-based stuff to build up trust within the community.
Sure.
And I just didn't get the response that I was after. So I've completely changed my my way of thinking around and the way that I'm trying to get into new markets, and I'm trying to build trust within the community first, showing what I've done before I start doing promotional content. So like there have been some really big learning curves.
So I'm assuming that that's that first promotional campaign to get that up and running in Mildura didn't quite meet your expectations to begin with, but obviously in hindsight, it's probably taught you something extremely valuable.
Yeah, big time, big time. Like it's really humbling. It's like, oh, well, that didn't work at all.
And one of the things that I see a lot with businesses, and this is a big mind shift change, because I think for as long as we've all known, when you run a business, it's all about selling, and you've got to sell something to, and you've got to convince somebody to buy your product or service. And we've only ever known it by probably one particular way of just that hard sell, and then eventually, you know, people will either need it or be convinced that they need it. But I think these days, and I'm seeing a lot more of it, is that, you know, you give away so much more. You give away a lot more content. You educate people. You provide people with value up front with no expectations. And then as a result, you nailed it on the head, you build trust with people, and then people actually want to give back. Then they want to pay for the next level up, or something that involves more depth than what the initial value add up front is. And so for a lot of businesses that have been out there functioning for so many years, it's so counterintuitive where it doesn't make sense. I mean, why would you give away stuff that you could charge people for? But you got to do that now. You've got to turn around and build that trust and that loyalty, because there is a lot of noise out there, and it's a global marketplace now. So you've got to try and carve your niche.
Yeah, yeah. You just nailed that right on the head. You do. And I think Broken Hill is a little bit slower than other places, so that promotional content does still work here. Mm-hmm. But I am noticing probably within the last, I'd say, year, that there's been a really massive shift within the community to, instead of promotional content, just content without expectations, putting content out there without expectations, and building trust within people.
Well, I think when I started to see different changes, and I'm in a regional area down the south coast of New South Wales, not as remote as you, but I certainly certainly is similar mentalities where people are still, you know, still catching up and still working out what the bigger metro areas are doing, or, you know, global cities and whatnot. But I'm seeing, like, when I started to see those changes and people, you know, giving away content, giving value up front and building trust, the trust is such a big thing, because the first thing I thought was, all right, well, this sounds too good to be true. What's the catch? And so you either look into it a bit further, or you just go, nah, there's something there. I don't trust it. And then you go on your merry way. So to try and beat a lot of those stigmas is really challenging. But as more and more businesses move into this approach, I think a lot of people will be far more trusting up front, because they know that this is just a normal way of doing business now.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel that as well. I think about myself when I'm scrolling through Facebook, or Instagram or whatever I'm on, just the sheer amount of ads that pop up, promotional content that pops up, that you just swipe straight past, you just black out and don't think about it.
Mm.
Yeah,
definitely. Definitely. And, as I said before, there's a lot of noise out there, and it's a busy marketplace, and that's where, you know, a lot of the personal touches and really sort of getting down and dirty and connecting with people individually makes a big difference. And I think for you, just doing the type of work that you do in the industry that you're in, it's a very emotional based industry. It's very personal. It involves individuals and their own personal goals and their own demons and fears and everything that they've got to try and battle through. So if you're able to, I mean, you have to connect with people personally. So the loyalty and the repeat business is probably quite big once you get people over the line.
Yeah. Yeah. it is a very emotional, very, very emotional industry as well. And I think that actually plays in my favor or our favor a lot.
Mm.
So before all of this content marketing was a big thing, even thinking back over the last 4.5, even the last 10 years since I've been doing personal training, that the amount of free stuff that I had given out, like free personal training, free consults, free programs, just content stuff to help people has actually been huge. So I think the transition into me giving free content online has been quite easy. Mm. And you don't want to give away free stuff all the time, especially in a business because you become a charity.
Yeah.
But it's sort of been there to just help people more so than anything. So because I love helping people as well and seeing the best for them. So like thinking back over the years, it's probably thousands and thousands of dollars that I had given away for free just because I was able to and I wanted to see the person succeed. So going online, it means you can reach a greater audience with that as well without the expectation of anything in return.
And you know, your overheads potentially can be reduced because of, I guess, you know, the online platforms that are available out there, and it's more of a time investment probably rather than an expense, you know, well, an upfront expense anyway. So I guess it's there. I mean, obviously there's cons to the amount of time that you're investing in giving, you know, free content out there, but you would envision that eventually there's a return on that investment. And I mean, personally for yourself, as you said, you like to help people and being able to connect with people personally and see change and provide, you know, a critical helping hand in someone's life would be quite rewarding in itself.
Yeah. Like, I think you're in the wrong industry if you're doing this to not help people, I guess.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. I'm inspired. Not that I'll go and open up my own gym, but maybe I need to go to the gym. But it's exciting, and I think there's a lot of parallels with a lot of other businesses, regardless of the backgrounds, where certain things of, you know, planning ahead and projecting things and taking some risks and finding, you know, creative ways of getting upfront support from clients or from people in the local area. So well done. I think that's an amazing story, and I'm excited to see, it sounds like you're somebody that can't sit still. So I'm quite excited to see where the next several years are going to be for you with the gym and the online stuff and everything that you're involved with, because yeah, it's quite exciting to be watching.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, folks. Hope you enjoyed that episode with Trevor Williams. If you want to reach out to Trev and learn more about his journey and all of the services that he provides, you can go over to estrogym.com, estrgym.com. You can find Trevor on Facebook by searching Trevor Williams or Trevor Williams Coaching. He's also on Instagram by searching Trevor Williams Fitness, and the gym is also on Facebook as well. But as always, all the links will be in the show notes over at selfstarter.com.au, including my key takeaways. Number one, using every spare moment. Trevor had a really, really hard slog working in the mines with several days on at the mining site, which was hours of travel away, and then several days back at home. Now, Trevor needed that income from the mining job. However, he did use that downtime at home to build and grow his personal training business and community with every available moment that he had. Number two, subscriptions and pre-orders. This is such a great way to get upfront funding for your venture or your next phase of business. Trevor in particular used a subscription model for both gym and personal training attendees to get upfront commitment for multiple sessions. These upfront payments not only help secure the much needed funds, but they also ensure that there was client stability in the future months of operation, which would no doubt help with the growth of the business. Number three, content over promo. For years and years, it was always thought that you had to do the hard sell first before you delivered any form of value to anybody else. Trevor has learned, however, that content is king. By providing as much upfront content and value, he can build that trust first with people, attract those prospective customers, and then later upsell them with a training course or a series of sessions. Number four, it's the energy that you put in. Trevor used a really great analogy of powerlifting, where the amount of energy that you put in determines your achievements. The results and successes are determined by the energy that you put in, whether that be physically, mentally, or both. Remember that the more you put in, the more you get back. And that's it. Those were my key takeaways from this episode. And as always, I mean, you know the drill. If I missed something or got something different from this episode, leave a comment in the show notes over at selfstarter.com.au, or you can shoot me a message via Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or even LinkedIn if you really want to, or the contact page over on the website. I would love to hear from you regardless. So thank you very much for people that are continuing to give me feedback along the way. And I must say, here we are. Another episode in the bag. Thank you so much for the ongoing guest recommendations and the support for this podcast. I am getting so many recommendations and suggestions for potential guests for the Self-Starter podcast from so many different people from all corners of this country. And I'm really looking all over Australia, and especially in the regional and remote pockets, because there are so many stories that need to be told. And I'm looking for people that have bricks and mortar stores, e-commerce platforms, people that are just earning a little bit of pocket money on the side, and everything in between. There are so many stories that need to be shared, so much inspiration, and I'm really looking forward to highlighting more people that are creating their own desirable lifestyle. So thank you everyone who is contributing and giving me ideas and content for the podcast. I'm loving where this podcast is going. I have so many great episodes to come. But until next fortnight, folks, take care, keep stepping forward, and we will speak very soon. Bye-bye. Larry, please.